This is Mae Brussel. It's the second half of broadcast number 763. I mentioned that the celebration for the Statue of Liberty began with the Eagle leading the way and other tall ships and small ships behind it. There was a letter to the letters to the editor in the New York Times. It was written by Peter Stanford, president of the National Maritime Historical Society, and he writes, "Let the Esmeralda sail in liberty." And he explains that even though the Esmeralda was a ship, a prison ship used by Chile at the time of the overthrow of the government, that there are other examples that could shed light on the principle involved. Then he says the Eagle, the U.S. Coast Guard's own ship, was launched by Adolf Hitler and named for the street thug Horst Wessel. We neither deny nor condone that background. We rejoice that the ship sails in freedom to good purposes today. Then, to top off some of the small articles about Hitler's ship, the Washington Times has a way, there's a term for it, of exaggerated stories or cartoons, a full three-quarters of a whole page with these ghastly cartoons. The Washington Times is owned by Reverend Moon, and its editor, Arnaud de Borchgrave, has been linked with the intelligence community for many, many years into counterintelligence and covert action. And as sure as you would believe, the Washington Times had not one page, but two full pages of newsprint, if you can believe the size, with a picture of these great big blue sails. And one page is called Soaring with the Eagle by Jim Watson. And it's, as I say, one whole page, another whole page of this ship. And Jim Watson says the Eagle is a bark. That's a term for a craft that has three masts, but uses square sails on only two of them. Commissioned by Hitler in 1936, the 290-foot Horst Wessel became the property of the United States. Commissioned by Hitler in 1936, became the property of the United States in 1946, a prize of war. She was renamed the Eagle, and the swastika on her bow was replaced by a carved wooden eagle. Now a seagoing classroom for Coast Guard cadets, Eagle is America's most famous showboat, a floating ambassador of goodwill, a recruiting tool for the United States Coast Guard. On her way from the Coast Guard Academy in New London, Connecticut, Eagle's first stop will be Washington to help the swearing-in of the Coast Guard's new commandant, Admiral Paul Yost, and for some activities promoting the Potomac River Fest. The third celebration of the waterfront opens tomorrow. After a week's visit, Eagle will set sail for Bermuda, her next port of call, Norfolk, Virginia. There, she will be host for the ship in operation sail 1986, and on July the 4th, the Eagle will lead all the other ships in this celebration for the international flotilla of 20 or more tall ships. Now, I bring this up because of who publishes this newspaper, these huge color pictures of it, and how open they are of this prize of America. As I said before on another broadcast, if America defeated Hitler and we went across the ocean to do that fact, we could make our own ship, and the pride of America should be American-made. There is symbolism here that the in-team gives with each other, and the masses lose the point. And this source of pride and of breaking in new people in the Coast Guard and training them there on Adolf Hitler's ship is not lost among those people. And I really believe that that ship should be turned in and destroyed and put away, and America build its own ship before it builds a space shuttle for $2 billion and have the pride of America be American and not having been made by Adolf Hitler. Now, I want to talk a bit about terrorism, the rest of this broadcast, almost all of it. The People's Daily World had an article June 20th, 1986. For those of you who follow World Watchers or David Emery's program in Nip Tuck, One Step Beyond, this will seem almost comical. The title of the little article is Neo-Fascist Blamed for Bomb. Neo-Fascist terrorists and members of Italian military intelligence were responsible for the August 1980 bombing of the Bologna Railroad Terminal, in which 85 people were killed and 200 wounded. The Italian government made public their investigation of the case this week in Rome, including this conclusion. Involved in the planning, the Balfour bomb were a score of known Italian neo-fascists. They were acting on orders of Licio Gelli, who attended Ronald Reagan's inauguration, nicknamed the puppet master, the head of a secret neo-fascist propaganda Dewey P2 conspiracy, which used as a cover for a Freemason's lodge. Also involved were General Pietro Musumeci, former Deputy Director of Italian Military Intelligence, the CISMI, S-I-S-M-I, and Assistant Giuseppe Belmonte. Musumeci played a key role in getting Turkey neo-fascist Mehmet Ali Agha to falsely charge Bulgaria with involvement in the 1981 attempted assassination. Now, it's interesting that they put in there that the Italian intelligence and this secret fascist organization played a key role in getting Agha to implicate the Bulgarians, but the title neo-fascist is, they were outright Nazis. Licio Gelli was a member of the Waffen-SS, and if he was, he still is. And the people working with him, like Stefano Della Calle, attend meetings and meet with people in the United States at the present time. He goes in and out of the United States and is creating the background for the terrorism that's taking place in Peru at the present time, and they work closely with Klaus Barbie. You can't call Joseph Mengele and Klaus Barbie and Licio Gelli neo-fascists. They are Nazis. They were, they are, and to believe this is a new organization that sprung up 40 years after World War II is really ridiculous. Now, an item about Hayden Lake, Idaho, where a avowed fascist resides. He had a press conference this past week. The title of the article is White Supremacists Gather to Establish a Homeland. Hayden Lake, Idaho. White supremacy leaders gathered yesterday, they have an annual meeting, to create a Aryan Nations Congress to unite their effort for a whites-only homeland in the northeast of the United States. The white supremacist meeting is their first gathering in the northeast since the arrest of a group of the FBI investigations that led to December's racketeering conviction of 10 members of the Order, a militant right-wing group blamed for 2 murders, more than 4 million in robberies, counterfeiting, and other crimes, and they haven't been charged with the murder of Alan Berg in Denver, Colorado, and they were all linked to that particular murder. What they don't say in this article, the People's World, is that, this is the Los Angeles Herald that printed this one, the LA Herald. They don't say that Richard Butler, who is the minister under the guise of religion, who heads the Aryan Nations and the Order up in Idaho that wants the white statehood of these various northwestern areas, that he was a engineer at Lockheed and that he worked with Thane Caesar, the man who murdered Robert Kennedy at the Ambassador Hotel, who was moonlighting as a Lockheed security guard, and that Richard Butler worked with the U2 program that also incorporated Edwin Wilson and James McCord and all the top people who later surfaced at the time of Watergate and later. They want their own homeland, and at their annual meeting, they declared their intent, but they're not nuts or fanatics. They're tied to William Pierce, whose goal is to kill every Jew and black in the United States, and Pierce worked for United Technology, for United States Air Force, and Richard Butler for Lockheed. So this is our military looking like they are separate from the military as they're bringing out the idea that the whites have to be separate in this country. I'm not going to update the broadcast I did on the murder of Len Bias or Don Rogers this week. I'll do more next week or the week after. But interestingly enough, the LA Times had a story, June the 11th, source of poison cocaine sought, Salt Lake City. Narcotic officers are checking confiscated stocks of cocaine to trace the source of cocaine that is linked with cyanide and has killed one drug user. It may be responsible for killing four others, fell ill. Cocaine and cyanide were found in each of the 5 victims' bloodstreams, Lieutenant Bailey of Salt Lake City County Sheriff's Narcotics Division said. Now, one of the problems with cyanide, it doesn't always show up, and it affects the heart that you have what is like an instant heart attack. So while they're investigating the deaths of Don Rogers and Len Bias, the problem of cyanide and cocaine is a possibility coming out of laboratories in Salt Lake City. And, of course, Utah is one of the repositories of our German biological warfare systems. There was an article in the LA Times this past week, Dreisel, that's Lefty Dreisel, the basketball coach, faces grand jury investigation. Maryland's coach actions after Bias's death are under scrutiny. and they are looking into the fact of the connection of people high up and close to Lynn Bass who obstructed justice. The grand jury is looking into charges against Brian Tribble for supplying drugs. Tribble is a former Maryland student. He was a friend of Bias. He called an ambulance and was with him and then left. And the people who allegedly were his friends have all disappeared, and it's going to take court orders to get them to testify what happened and to try to get to the bottom of this particular untimely death. And then, of course, the family of Mr. Rogers claim that there's no way that he could take the drugs, and they are questioning the coroner in Sacramento. Now, a widow stepped forward this week, which is very unusual, the widow of Michael J. Smith, the pilot for the Challenger, and she's filed a $15.1 million wrongful death suit against NASA and against the former rocket manager Lawrence B. Mulloy, M-U-L-L-O-Y. The LA Times story, and of course it was syndicated on the wire service and was on TV, NASA spokesman Dave Garnett said the claim was received July 3rd at the Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama, which is directly where the responsibility should be. The claim, a copy of which was released by the space agency, said Smith was thrown about in the spacecraft in the few seconds preceding his death, would know of his impending death. NASA has the secret transcripts, they're keeping them secret, whereby they say they didn't know they were going to die, even though they're floating in the air and dropping 10 miles down into the ocean. They're not supposed to know they're dying, and they know they didn't know, but they won't let you see the transcripts or hear them, so forth. And she says that they had to know their impending death. The claim alleged negligence of NASA employees, that this was the sole proximate cause of Smith's death. The claim said the NASA officials included Mr. Mulloy, who knew or should have known that the booster rocket joint seal that failed would not properly seal and that a catastrophic accident would likely occur. The officials should and knew that the cold weather could contribute to the seal failure. Now, this same Jane Smith, a while earlier, it was a month earlier in June, was castigating NASA. She hadn't filed a suit yet. She praised Alan J. McDonald and Roger Bojoloi of Morton Thiokol of standing up to the fact that the Challenger would be affected by the cold temperatures, and they were worried about the booster joints. And then within 1 month of the time, she decided to sue NASA. And she described in this article in June one of her daughters crying when she saw this shuttle fall into the sea. And she said, "Daddy, you always promised nothing would happen." So now this is a widow taking actions. Corazon Aquino, I hope, will take actions against the murder of her husband in the Philippines. Mrs. Buto is continually acting at risk of her life, and her brother's been killed in Pakistan, to illustrate the problem of how her father was murdered. The sons of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg continuing the investigation of the death of their parents, the electrocution of their parents, charged with passing nuclear secrets to the Soviet Union. And Mrs. Bruno Hauptmann, the widow of the man who got the electric chair in New Jersey for killing the Lindbergh child, is pursuing with new evidence, and an attorney from San Francisco just this week filed a new suit because she claims the New Jersey officials lied, and that a German fellow who was in New Jersey who worked with Bruno Hauptmann left this money, the ransom money, in their garage and went on to Germany and then died, and Bruno Hauptmann was left with this money in his garage and was charged with murdering the Lindbergh child. Now, that whole episode, which happened in 1932, was very political because it turned Charles Lindbergh against the United States, and he became very sympathetic to Hitler, and he moved to England, he and his wife, and were going to move to Germany. And they were close to Goering and Goebbels and the German hierarchy, and he turned his back on America after his son was killed. And in order to get that mindset to turn him, the murder of his child in New Jersey, just when they had moved into a new home and had so much future in that home, was a turning point in the mind of Charles Lindbergh about America. He was sympathetic to the fascist cause anyway, but this act happening to him in this country caused him to lean more to Nazi Germany, which he did, and the murder triggered off those actions that he followed with later. I did several broadcasts on the fact that I believe Chernobyl was a disaster planned to embarrass the Soviet Union, that it was sabotaged and the information was delayed to Mr. Gorbachev so that Radio Free America could tell the Eastern Europeans and those in the Soviet Union that we cared more for them than their leaders. And I went into detail many of the implications of why I believe it was sabotaged. If you want those back broadcasts, they are available. The Monterey Herald today in the wire service had a story. Soviets on Sunday read the Politburo report on the extensive political, economic, and human costs at Chernobyl disaster. They want punishment for the people who did it. They're very open about what happened. And a military officer said if the death penalty is possible, that would be okay. Instead of being secretive about an accident the Soviet Union was responsible for a change, they're very open with foreigners. And this article said they're sharing with them their anger and frustration. There was another article printed on Sunday, July 20th, USSR to try key Chernobyl plant officials. They've been charged with gross negligence, bad errors, shortcomings, testing parts of the nuclear plant that were not safe. And this article mentions these particular people, a deputy minister of power and an electrician, another deputy director of the institute that designed the reactor. They fired one gentleman by the name of Meshkov. One had disappeared and left the premises. I don't know where he traveled or how. And I was suspicious of a death right after that of a military person who was recruited in the Ukraine in 1943 and would have access to the facilities and be knowledgeable about that there. So the Soviet Union is angry, and they're not letting this thing rest. Now, going down to Brazil to update the Mengele story, I was very surprised to read in the Associated Press, July 8th, Brazil police charge four who harbored Mengele. The police have made criminal charges against four people, and this is interesting. They have arrested or charged Giza and Gita Stammer, Austrian immigrants, and Wolfram and Lisolette Bossert, because they lied to authorities and harbored an illegal alien. Now, it's really amazing that they would bring this out, that these two harbored, not that possibly the Bossert's buried a person that wasn't Mengele, but that they housed Mengele. If convicted, they could be sentenced up to 4 years in prison. The case is now in the hands of a federal prosecutor. And it goes on to say how the grave in San Paulo was dug up and that it was Joseph Mengele who died while he was swimming with the Bossert's. Now, an interesting fact that should be investigated, and I'll pursue it if I can, is that at the time the body was dug up and all this publicity was going, Giza Stammer, the husband of Gita, had left, and he was on a merchant marine ship going to the Philippines and Japan, and I believe that he could have Joseph Mengele on that ship, leaving the country. He and his son were officials of the merchant marine activities going out of São Paulo, Brazil, so there would be no way ever to find Mengele if he was with them. So maybe by charging him for this minor charge of having harbored Mengele, the whole thing about helping Mengele escape or drowning a person, a different person, won't even be brought up. 4 years isn't very much, and they got a lot of fame and money and support, and the Stammers got property and ranch from the Mengele family. But I was interested in the fact that this came up. Another article about the Mengele family says that the state of Bavaria used public funds of Germany to bail out a company that was starting to go bankrupt. They make agricultural machinery. It's run by the relatives of Joseph Mengele. The Mengele family firm specializes in agricultural machinery and is the largest of its kind in Europe. Their business amounted to $110 million in 1984. However, they suffered losses, and this is interesting, because the effect of some European community farm policy decisions and the April 26th Soviet nuclear disaster at Chernobyl. Now, the Bavarian government, the state of Bavaria, is giving money to the Mengele family, to their farm equipment, based on the fact that they lost money at Chernobyl. Many of you regular world watchers might share with me a conversation on what in the heck this means. The government of Bavaria said they were justified in giving the Mengele factory money because it involves the economy in Günzburg, where they employ 1,100 people in a town of 14,000. The bank has waived their demands on the farm. They have insufficient money so that the interest and the loans are forgiven. The company is in the hands of three generations of Joseph Mengele, headed by Mengele's nephews, Karl Heinz Mengele and Dieter Mengele. What it doesn't say is that Dieter Mengele owns tractors and equipment in Indiana in the United States, and a friend, Brian Bolin, who wrote a book on Mengele, has met with and seen Dieter Mengele in this country. In fact, he was afraid of his life, he and his co-worker, of being killed by this particular character, and there were allegations that Mengele in 1970, after having died in 1969, was at the home of Dieter Mengele upstate New York. So they're very active in the farm business, and how the Bavarian government is giving money to the Mengele farm tractors because of the incident at Chernobyl is something to really think around and play with. It is so very weird. Now, I want to go into terrorism in America as much time as I have, and obviously I'll have to do it, continue with it next week. But there was a small article in the Los Angeles Herald. Two private school owners face trial for firebombing. And I don't know if it went over your wire services, but two teachers, Elizabeth Hamilton, 39, and Charlotte Wyckoff, 51, have to stand trial because they hired four mercenaries to firebomb two former teachers at their nursery schools. They have five nursery schools. The person who was arrested out there in Riverside, California, was Franklin Joseph Camper, who operates a survival and mercenary training school in Hueytown, Alabama, and his two assistants. One of them has fled, and they're looking for the other two. Now, Franklin Camper is being arrested in San Bernardino County. Being at the home of two people who he firebombed is as horrendous and gigantic as James McCord, chief of security for the committee to reelect the president and for the CIA, being caught at the Watergate Hotel. Another article from the LA Herald, two school owners accused, and this was just a few days later that this was printed, had a item about the chain of private elementary schools. You know, nobody is safe. Nursery schools, elementary schools, and the women who run them were arrested by the federal government because they operate Pacific Coast Preparatory Schools with three sites in San Bernardino and one in Orange County. This has four schools, another article, five schools. San Bernardino, which is the area where Thane Caesar, who shot Robert Kennedy, is allegedly one of the organizers of the Nazi Party. This is what I learned years ago. So this, another small article. Then the Monterey Herald, our own paper here, had a story, mercenary charged in bombings, in the picture of Franklin Camper and how he was jailed without bond after his arrest in Alabama, and it involved the California Learning Centers. And this is the article. It says five elementary and nursery schools. And Wall Street Journal even had a story. Camper is so important that it finally got into the Wall Street Journal, although I haven't seen it in New York Times or Washington Post. Mercenary group's chief accused of firebombing, Franklin Camper, director of the Mercenary Association, has been arrested and charged with blowing up two automobiles in California. They were actually homes that were bombed. The automobiles happened to be in the garage. All are charged with conspiracy, he and the two men, and one that has gotten away that they're trying to find and would involve as long as 25 years in prison, but you know Franklin Camper isn't going to get that. Now, there was another long article in the Los Angeles Times, May 21st. Some of you could go to the library and get it, titled, Five Arrested in Firebombing of Cars. And that's what I want to share with you and do more this week and next week on Franklin Camper and the importance of Franklin Camper. But before I go into this long article, because it'll take the remainder of the time, I just want to tell you the backup. In the gist of this first story, Franklin Camper was hired by these two ladies who run these five schools to firebomb two homes because two women who worked for them left and were going to take it before the Labor Relations Board. And Camper personally came to California. I mean, he has this school to train mercenaries overseas, and here he is training people linked to Air India crash, to the murder attempt of Rajiv Gandhi, to the planned murder of Gandhi in Mexico in August of 86, to the bombs put on a Air Canada plane that goes to Japan, and it exploded in the airport in Tokyo. He's been linked to the Contras, the training of the Contras, and the Soldiers of Fortune, the mercenaries all over the world. But here he is domestically in the United States doing what, for, and he works for the FBI and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, doing himself something, and in that situation, flying to California twice and doing it. What importance do these two particular teachers have with their five schools? Now, the main article, it came out, as I say, May 21st. Now, just this last week, July 18th, 1986, there was a story in the LA Times, Mother Accused of Death Plot Against Her Daughter. And the gist of this story is that Mrs. Wyckoff has been charged by the grand jury in Los Angeles of attempting to hire somebody to murder her daughter, who's the sole witness against Franklin Camper, to protect Camper, an agent of the FBI, and as I say, working with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. She wants to protect Camper, and her daughter is the sole witness because Camper's airplane tickets to California and the rented car and hotel and so forth was paid in cash. And the woman who saw Camper and knew about it, her daughter, gave testimony for the original indictment. So just this past week, the mother who hired the mercenaries to firebomb the former teachers, her daughter, has Shirley Wright, 28 years old, has been protected. And the story is that the mother was arranging to have the daughter murdered so that Franklin Camper and the training school officials would get off. So this is how horrendous it is. Now, I talked to one of the two parties involved whose home was firebombed, and I wanted to meet him. His wife had met Franklin Camper. He had been to her home. They usually canvass the joints before they bomb your house. And I had a long talk, 2 or 3 hours with him, Mr. Russo, but he didn't come to the house. His wife was afraid. They were afraid of their life, and of course, I didn't push it. Joanne Russo is one of the people, not Joanne, but the Russo family were one of the two families involved that were firebombed. And you can't pressure people, of course, if they feel in danger. And maybe your instincts were right because her husband would come see Mae Brussel. And of course, there's a lot of things that happen in Los Angeles that indicate they know where I am and what I am doing. And so we just talked on the telephone, which also can be tapped. But people that are vicious enough to kill their own daughter to protect this head of the training school in Alabama will do anything to the witnesses whose home was firebombed, who saw Camper at their house. So it is best that they stay in their house and stay protected as much as they can and don't cross over into where Mae Brussel is staying, because they may have a hard way getting home if they ever got home alive. Now, just for the remaining minutes of this particular broadcast, I'll start with the story, the LA Times article, School Owners Hired Mercenaries, court paper says. San Bernardino County, there's a arrest over charges of two car firebombings. Defendants with Franklin Camper in this case are two women who own several preschools and elementary schools in Orange County and San Bernardino. The woman saw what they thought was a harassment by former teachers, so they turned to Franklin Camper all the way in Alabama. They didn't take their harassment to the courts. They took it to a man who teaches you how to cut off ears and slice throats and how to set people on fire. And they turned to him in Alabama, and he, instead of saying, hey, I can't do it inside the United States, he hops a plane and comes right out to California. And I will reiterate that over and over as we talk about the Camper story. The article goes on, there's a 42-page criminal complaint issued May 20th, 1986, involving an undercover agent who posed as a mercenary training with Camper and a four-man mission that went to California. Two bodyguards who hid in a tree with rifles, two women who carried firearms in their purses and the ammunition in their brassieres. Arrested was Charles Ruth Wyckoff and Elizabeth Hamilton, Franklin Joseph Camper, James Cuneo, 22 years old, Paul Hamilton, 42, and William Hedgecorth, 22, who was still out free being sought. The charge of the fact that Franklin Camper was out in California is very important. We don't know what purpose he would give this kind of service to these particular teachers. It couldn't just be for money. I'll continue with this next week because we are just short of time. but I think it's one of the most important stories in the country for the implications of what these people do inside the United States. And the excuse of their schools is to train people to go overseas and do these activities while they're doing them right here at home. This is Mae Brussel, and we'll analyze some more of this material. Thank you for your books and letters and calls, and I'll keep in touch with you. If you have any question about the material that I put on the air, I'm listed in the phone book, and you can call and talk it over with me. It's difficult to write about it.